If it isn't a good time for you to buy a new home, Ultra Washmobile can make the exterior of your home look like new. Many FM Talk listeners have used Hal Hayes at Ultra Washmobile. He washes concrete, decks, patios, pool areas, houses, and more. Exterior cleaning is their specialty. Ultra Washmobile also cleans commercial buildings. Don't just get your outside areas washed, get them ultra washed. Call today to get on the schedule, 251-366-5291, or contact Hal at ultrawashmobile.com.
The poets tell how Poncho fell and left his living in a cheap hotel.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line is brought to you by Ascension Technologies, 251-343-0106. Please get in touch with the show there. Still to come on the program here in about an hour, State Senator Clyde Chambliss will be with us, and also our new state auditor, Andrew Sorrell. So stick around for that. But joining us now, a regular on this show, we're always very grateful he makes time for us. He represents you guys in the north part of Mobile County, and now parts of Baldwin County. State Representative Shane Stringer is on the line with us. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Doing great, Jeff. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. Well, how are things going? I know it's there's always something going on this close to session, but it seems like it was a long way away, but now here we are. It's the middle of February.
Yeah, it's on us now. March 1st, we'll get back to it. And, you know, of course, a lot of people are starting to reach out to us now and, kind of let us know what their agendas or concerns are for the upcoming session. And you have a lot of legislators starting to pre-file legislation and bills for the upcoming session. And, it's getting busy, about to get busier.
Yeah. The two things I hear, one's kind of small ballish to me is doing something, to re-up economic incentives and maybe change that law. But the other is very broad. And I assume, I don't know what it might be. We haven't really had that, but just education that we got to do more to improve Alabama's standing among the other 49 states.
Yeah, there's a lot of work going on with that. Representative Terry Collins, Chairman Collins, Education Policy Committee has worked a lot with Representative Alan Baker, and, they've come up with the Numeracy Act and, put a lot of work into in our education, and we are starting to see things turn around. So I am excited about the possibilities that we have coming in the future, and hopefully we can continue to address those issues and work with our education partners in trying to improve our system.
Yeah, so stay tuned is what I keep hearing. Let's kick it off here, too, though. We spent a lot of time this early release bill that passed through that special session in 2021 starting to come into effect. Senator Elliott across the bay wants to put a pause on it, and a little bit of a back and forth with the governor. But just kind of your assessment of the way that's being handled right now, where we are with it. What do you make of that? Are we putting too much on the Department of Corrections?
I don't think we are. It's like anything, they have jobs to do, and, we have allocated the resources and money to help them in hiring new people and trying to meet their needs. So, no, I think, the ball was dropped in not doing the notifications prior to some of these releases. And, I think as a state, we've got to do better. We should hold ourselves more accountable and try to do more to make sure that we protect our citizens. The public safety and the safety of our citizens is the main primary focus on government, and that's what we've got to try to look at and do better at.
A lot of law enforcement speaking out against this legislation that you guys passed. A lot of district attorneys around the state, the attorney general himself What do you think? Does it need another look?
Yeah, I think we need to consider looking at it. You know, there was a, you know, when that legislation was passed and pushed, there was a lot of emphasis put on the possibility of the federal government doing a dissent degree with our DOC and taking over our prisons and potentially letting out, you know, 50% of their inmates or more. And so that was a big concern. And I think that's potentially what got a lot of legislators to support this. You know, we were told it was going to hopefully prevent DOC from, you know, getting taken over by the federal government and potentially, you know, help ease the stress. But, you know, letting violent offenders out is not going to be the solution to this. We have got to come up with something better, including building more prisons. I mean, just public safety is our should be our first and utmost priority. So we've got to step up and address that. And, you know, my opinion as a 30-year law enforcement officer is going to be building new prisons. You know, the society basically dictates on how many prisons we need. And at this time, we don't have enough. So we have got to step up and try to address that issue.
Yeah, and well, right now, I don't know if you're keeping up with it. It's hard for me to tell. Our next guest, Senator Chambliss, says everything's going okay, but are the prisons coming together? I mean, are they getting built? Are they going to be ready for 2026?
It's going to be a push, but they, you know, the powers to be keep saying that they are and that they're getting everything in line. Of course, with any construction, this day and age, it's, you know, got its snags and issues, but the sooner we can, you know, start laying bricks and start building prisons, the better.
And it just, it doesn't look like any grounds being turned over at one of the locations. I don't know what's going on up in Escambia County, but, I guess we'll have to wait and see. It's just, it's remarkable to me, though, the governor seems pretty confident that this is going to come right along. You're probably hearing from the same people I am on that.
Yeah, you know, we're constantly we as in legislators are constantly being told that it's coming along and, you know, everything's on track. So, you know, we're praying that that's the case. I mean, we have got to do more. And you know, the fact of the matter is we're going to, if it's a money issue, we're just going to have to find the money and put it where it's needed and address this issue. Cause I mean, right now our prisons are 80% violent offenders or violent offenses. The other 20% have, you know, other circumstances related to why they're there. So releasing inmates, any other inmates is not going to be a solution in the future.
You got to wonder this too. What if scenario, and if any of these guys that have been let out, what happens if they do commit a violent crime? God forbid. But what if they do?
Yeah.
And then what do you do? How do you? I mean, why would some of these lawmakers put themselves out on a limb on this?
Yeah, I think that's something we're going to have to wait and see, but. You know, like I said, a lot of the push during that legislation being passed was, you know, that if we didn't do something to prevent the federal government from coming in and doing a dissent degree on our DOC, that they were going to come in and basically let, you know, an extreme amount of inmates out and sure enough going to have problems. So, you know, it's like with everything. There's consequences, sometimes unintended consequences to the actions we take in Montgomery. So, you know, we have to constantly address that and try to minimize it.
And I think what would help here, it's not clear to me exactly, and I've asked dozens of people, what exactly are the DOJ's expectations? What exactly is this federal judge Myron Thompson's expectations? Because how close is this? How, you know, is a consent decree on the table? If not, are there benchmarks? And it's all of these unknowns, Representative, that I know it's got to make y'all's job difficult, but you're sitting here and you're wondering, and you hear about another, you know, something going, another Eighth Amendment violation, let's say, or something like that, and you're just thinking, man, I mean, how close, how far away is some kind of consent decree or, you know, takeover of Alabama's correction system?
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. It's, you know, of course, in Montgomery, we're hearing a little bit, you know, here and there, but not enough to give us the full picture of where we stand with the federal government and what we're looking at on that. I know the Attorney General's, Steve Marshall, is doing a lot of work to prevent that from happening and trying to keep a balance. And what we do here in trying to make sure that we maintain safety for our citizens across the state. So it's going to be interesting in the upcoming session to see what kind of briefings we get and to find out exactly where we are, if that information is passed along.
Joined by State Representative Shane Stringer here on the program. A lot has been made of the financial situation of some of our sheriffs in all 67 counties after the constitutional carry bill. People just not buying the permits. I saw the governor is a grant to cover some of that cost. Do you think that's enough? Does the legislature going to have to put more into coffers for sheriffs to compensate for the pistol permit fees they've lost?
Yeah, there's some consideration to add more money to that to assist them and help them. You know, one of the things that, you know, there was an expected drop in the permits for a couple of different reasons. One, you know, there was a spike in permits. Sales, gun sales, ammunition sales during the last presidential election, and with all the riots going on across the country, a lot of uncertainty, and people were just scared. So they were out buying guns, permits, ammunition, and, you know, so we knew once everybody realized the end of the world wasn't coming that it would potentially start dropping from that. And then, you know, you add in the lifetime permit and the 3 and 5 year permits. We knew that, you know, when people get those, you wouldn't see as many every year, and it would be a little more inconsistent. But, you know, I'm sure the bill has affected the sales of permits a little, and, you know, we're going to have to address that. And, you know, we're out of all the states that have passed that legislation, Alabama is the only state that has put any money aside to assist their sheriffs. So I think the sheriffs, you know, We're taking care of them. We're probably one of the more pro-law enforcement legislatures in Alabama, and we're doing what we can do to try to help them. This bill has been going on for probably the last 10 years, and, you know, the sheriffs knew that this was coming, and, you know, so I think a lot of it is just they're going to have to prepare and adjust to, you know, what we've got and what's come along. So, but I know that there is talk in Montgomery and about potentially increasing some of that money to try to help the sheriffs out.
Something else you guys are going to look at, or at least I know upstairs in the Senate, but Senator Weaver has a couple of bills, but one primarily to kind of reform good time or maybe, you know, time off for good behavior off of Senate's. And I think it reflects kind of what the governor has in an executive order. But back to the criminal justice side of this stuff, what's your take on her effort?
Yeah, I've been in contact with Senator Weaver and also Attorney General Steve Marshall about that bill and that legislation. And, you know, it's needed. Somewhere down the line, our good time rules and our prison system, correction system has gotten off kilter. You know, the suspect that killed Deputy Brad Johnson and shot Chris Poole up in Bibb County should have never been out. He had a previous escape from a work release center up in Wilcox County and should have never been out of jail. And yet he was. His good time that he had acquired, he did not lose that for his bad behaviors. You know, the good time rules are to incentivize good behavior in our prison systems and to, you know, try to help us keep law and order in the prison systems and, you know, to give them a reason to act right and do good. But pretty much the way it is now, you know, they're getting good behavior, whether they're good or bad. You know, they're getting up to 75 days for every 30 days they serve. So we've got to address that. We've got to fix that. You know, we've just about every situation we run into where there's a law enforcement officer hurt or killed or a citizen, you're able to go back and show that these people had extensive criminal history and truthfully should probably still be in jail.
Yeah, and I mean, these are the kind of things when something happens and somebody's out because they got out for good time, an abused system, and then something happens. These are the things we really look back at and look at crimes that were committed, or you know, in some cases, deaths that didn't have to be.
Exactly, the suspect that shot Chris Poole and Deputy Johnson. You know, he had assaulted a correction officer. He had a prior escape. You know, everything that he had done should have revoked or pulled every bit of his good time that he had acquired, but it didn't. He was still, you know, still giving it. So, you know, it's a major problem. It's probably one of the hottest topics being talked about amongst legislators right now and trying to address that and fix it. And, you know, I know Senator Weaver has been in contact with the DOC and trying to, you know, work with them and see what we can do to help them. But, you know, we've got to fix some of those loopholes and those issues to keep these bad guys in jail.
Last question. I'm going to ask you this every time you come on. Anything new on Highway 45?
Not at this time. I do have another meeting coming up. I've got several of the senators and representatives that are assisting me with this issue. And, you know, we're going to continue to bring the issue to the governor and her staff and to Director Cooper and his staff. You know, this was an issue that has gone on for the last 40 plus years. And, you know, I guess, you know, it's just not a lot of residents or people that live on 45 up in the north part. So I don't know if that's the reason they don't consider it a priority or what it is, but we're going to continue to push, going to continue to draw attention to it. You know, Representative Brett Easterbrook's been a very avid supporter and pusher to help try to get this addressed and done. And, you know, we're going to continue to fight. I'm going to continue. Every time there's another death on 45, I'll be knocking on the governor's door and bringing it to their attention. And, you know, we'll just keep fighting this fight until we get something done.
Representative, we appreciate your time this morning. We'll talk again soon.
Yes, sir. Thanks a lot.
All right, guys, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Stay a while. We sing about